Welcome in, ladies and gentlemen, to MBR, or as we like to call it around here, Nothing But Rants, the show where I find topics that I'm oddly passionate about, and I pontificate upon them. These are not hot takes, but rather takes that I'm hot about.
Let's shut up and grab some tape.
Make me more of like an independent person. Like, no, you have to ask for the cookie. Because I would, anytime you go up in the bakery, like, it's like you had to ask the baker, like, can I get a free cookie? So,
yeah, I mean, always snagging a free cookie for sure. Not as much today, definitely.
Dude, I thought I was cheating the system.
The one thing I did always do as a kid is the coupon machines in the aisles. You just go and snag a coupon and you hand it to your mom and be like, look, mom, I got you 10 cents off some saltine crackers.
Like, we don't need that. You have three of these already. Yes. Just like a handful, like thinking you're helping the family. It's really just like,
I'm saving us so much
stop
money.
Stop it.
Now they don't get those anymore. Not even in the stores anymore.
But sad.
Something fun to do. Welcome in, ladies and gentlemen. There's your random rant for the day. I know that maybe some people weren't a huge fan of yesterday's, so maybe this one was better. But we got a loaded show for you guys today here in the MBR Hour. We got a litany of topics. You know, yesterday we had just one major topic that took up a big chunk of the show, telling you why your favorite team might not win a national title this upcoming season. Today, it's a little more staggered. We're going to be talking about how college football, spending in college football, isn't slowing down anytime soon. There's a take around Indiana's culture right now that might be indicating potentially why they're already falling off after just winning a national title a couple of months ago. The NFL is poaching, Christian.
Oh, they are?
They're poaching refs. So we're going to talk about that, how that affects college football. You know, it's already a big topic about how refs are screwing up games and all those good things. So it continues to be a big talking point in football. We have a new college football playoff committee member. And it's a very familiar name. I'm sure most of you already know who it is. A very famous or a very viral moment happened today in the football world. It didn't happen at a huge college football campus, but it happened in college football. And a lot of people are talking about it. We're going to give you guys his takes on a practice video we saw. And then Auburn is doing something interesting, I would label it as, in their practice period. And so we're also going to hit on that. But first, I do want to talk about how – or I want to talk about this article from The Athletic that's discussing how – hey, we know what college football is right now. We know what the spending rate is. We know how much teams are spending, what it takes for you to have a really good roster. Everybody talks about having a $40 million roster or the $20.5 million, like whatever number it is. There's a whole lot of spending going on in college football. And The Athletic did an article discussing how it's not going to slow down anytime soon. In fact, the article, this comes from Antonio Morales, by the way, with The Athletic. This is an SEC head coach saying this. The article starts with this. The new number in our sport right now is $40 million. Oh. That's for the 26th season. What's it going to be for the 27th season? I don't know. I think if you're at $40 million this year, I bet you'll be at $45 million next year. So, again, we're talking about how it just is steps up a hill every single time. Like, yeah, you may have spent $40 million this year to win a national title, but next year it's going to cost you $45 million. Or the roster that you had this year is going to be an extra $5 million for you to obtain that roster next year. These levels just keep going up. There's some other interesting quotes in this as well. This one was probably the most intriguing one, in my opinion. This comes from a Pac-12 assistant coach, and he discussed how losing is actually more expensive than winning. And you know that, like, off the cuff, you think, that doesn't make any sense, because if you want to win football games, you got to spend more money. Like, that's kind of what we correlate winning with in college football now. So if you're losing games, you're probably not spending that much. But he puts it as this: losing is the most expensive element of our sport. Winning is far less expensive than losing. Losing, there's no return on investment. Winning is huge. I guess my question on that, though, is like, your return on investment is winning games, but there's not like a direct return on investment. Like, you're not making that money back necessarily.
That feels, and that's a Pac-12 coach, you said?
Assistant coach.
That feels extremely gross to be talking. As a coach, you should never be talking about return on investment, in my opinion. Yeah. And this is where I get with the issue of, and we see this in baseball already, where private equity is basically taking over and they're cutting corners now. On the flip side of that, it seems to be private equity in baseball, losing is more efficient and less costly than winning is. But when you start thinking about numbers and things like that as a coach and what's the return on investment and what's most cost efficient for us, like, you're losing the soul of this sport. And I think that's what the grossness of this all is where, oh, we have to find ways to make money and bring in as many dollars as we can because that incorporates wins for us. At the very least, that's good, where more money means more wins, where necessarily it's not just a bunch of greedy, you know, private equity trying to find ways to make money. But at some point, like, what we've lost what college football is in a large landscape.
Yeah, as soon as you start, and I'm sure that, like, and I'm sure prior to, like, spending being legal in college football, I put that in air quotes, like, as soon before it was even legal, I'm sure that there was discussions about, you know, getting your return on investment in some of these players, because let's be real, college players are being paid before this.
Uh-huh.
But I would also say that I don't necessarily agree with this all that much. Now, it makes complete sense for, like, say you're Penn State last year. I don't know how much Penn State's roster was last year, but I would bet you it wasn't cheap with the number of returning players that they had. They had Drew Aller, who would have been an expensive quarterback in last year's market, because I'm sure there were a lot of teams calling, trying to get him out of Penn State, all of these things. And then you go and have the season that you did. I understand that. Losing was super expensive for Penn State last year. But I don't necessarily understand it, because there's not a direct correlation, like, you're actually getting a return on your investment. You know what I'm saying?
No, I mean,
it's not like a business where you, like, yeah, if you make an investment here, you have a chance to double that money later on down the road.
That's what that bothers me the most about all this. And I get it, like, at the end of the day, college football is a business. It is meant to bring in money for the university. But I feel like 20 years ago, 15 years ago, the point of college football was to have pride for your school, to compete for national championships, to win national championships. And yes, that is still the overarching reason for that, and making the college football playoff is still more important. But when you start throwing in the dollar signs and how are we affecting the bottom line here and how does winning and losing change things, you've lost me at the point of what this sport is. Like, save that for the NFL. Save that for the like, professional leagues. And I understand that college athletics at this point is a professional league, but mm-hmm. Again, the soul of college football is stripped away by this.
Well, I'm glad you brought up the professional league. I know you didn't mention the NFL, but this article does, and it talks about how college football is closely resembling how the NFL works, and so much so that even the market of players, it's starting to resemble of that. I'm going to read you a couple of paragraphs here, but I think it's really important, so I don't mean to read too much, but I do think it's important to read all of this information. It says, that's not to mention that college football is resembling the NFL more and more each day, even though that's a turnoff for some. In the NFL, players reset the market all the time. Seattle's Jackson Smith and Jigba just became the highest paid receiver in the NFL with a 4-year, $168 million extension. The Rams trade Trent McDuffie, the highest paid corner in the league, earlier this month. It feels like a different quarterback resets the market at the position every offseason. It would be foolish not to expect the same to happen in college football. Nika Iamaleava, made a major commotion when he signed an NIL deal with Tennessee that could have paid him more than $8 million by the end of his junior year. Now high-end transfer quarterbacks are earning more than $4 million per season. Then it goes on to break down Jordan Seaton's contract, the tackle that transferred from Colorado to LSU, how he's making anywhere between $2 million and $3 million. But here's the interesting part. This comes from a Big Ten personnel staffer. Our joking motto is double it, which is what we say every cycle. It's like, whatever you hear, double it. That's just what it's going to end up being for a lot of these kids. Whatever we end up paying for this type of kid, next cycle you're going to have to double it. Trying to compare it to what it is even a year ago at this time is completely different.
I mean, there's no denying that we're in some form of a college football player bubble right now, in that, like, look, Trinidad Chambliss is a fantastic quarterback. There's a lot of fantastic players in college football right now. I don't think there's a world where a SEC starter should be making more than a NFL player. That's just the world we're in. I think that the college athletics and college football players are overvalued. I could be completely misevaluating that. I could be completely wrong in this aspect, but it seems like the inflation of the college athlete has come rather rapidly, and it doesn't seem like it's going to stop anytime soon. At what point you have to just wonder when programs are going to start tapping out? Like, we're kind of already seeing that. Like, you see donor fatigue, you see things like that. At what point are we going to reach the ceiling where everyone just goes, all right, look, we can't give these guys any more money?
I mean, I see it all the time now with, like, it seems like you can't go to any event in college athletics. Like, this isn't even just college football. This is like, you go to your favorite college town to catch a baseball game, a basketball game, a softball game, whatever it is. a hand is being placed out asking for you to give more money to whatever it is. I see jokes all the time about just put a big QR code in the middle of the field because that's essentially what it is. Like, you guys want more money? Well, just make the midfield logo a QR code for us to go donate more money, because it seems like every turn you make, it's just them asking for more and more money. And now you're getting into this conversation with just football, by the way. This isn't involving any other, or this article doesn't include any other sport in college, about how teams are going from, all right, $40 million this year. Next year, it's $45 million. Well, what's stopping it from going to $50 million the next year? Like, how far are we going to make it before we do see things like what the chat's talking about, where it kind of plateaus, things kind of calm down a little bit? Like, we're supposed to have this cap space, but we don't actually have it. I think even in this article, it mentions, you know, oh, we're supposed to have this spending limit, but nobody cares. Nobody's responding to that. Nobody's actually paying attention to it. It's just spend whatever money you want. In fact, I thought this last quote in the article was really funny, as someone who is an Atlanta Braves fan. It says, you're spending money, but you still have to spend money on the right guys, a Big 12 assistant coach said. The Dodgers spend a ton of money, but they can also spend it on the wrong guys, and then you're the New York Mets.
Ah, a nice little Mets dig there.
Yeah,
nice.
For sure. But another quote in here talks about how part of the reason why this is happening is because everybody thinks they're better than what they actually are. Like, everybody thinks they're better than everybody else. So, for example, the article mentions how Jordan Seaton this year got $2 million and $3 million, and he's the top tackle in the transfer portal class this year. Well, next year's transfer portal tackle prospect is probably going to think, well, I'm better than Jordan Seaton, and right, he got $2.5 million. I should be getting $3.5 million. So this is where you're seeing these salaries for all these football programs just slowly continue to creep up further and further and further. So really, I just thought the article was interesting. Of like, you know, we question all the time, like, the direction that college football is heading, and where's the end? Are we, like, do we see the light at the end of the tunnel? And this article indicates, like, it's only going to get worse. Only more money is going to continue to be spent. And it has to do with the players, has to do with the coaches, has to do with everybody. It's not just one particular party involved.
Yeah, the only way this stops is a Super League where there's an actual body that can enforce what's going on right now. Because we've seen the NCAA, and this is a topic we've talked about numerous times before, the NCAA is consistently getting its ass kicked in court, to the point where being able to enforce 132 schools that have 3 to 4 major collegiate programs, that how much they can spend on certain what and policing that is impossible. So you're going to have to find a way to get the major schools to break away to a Super League, and then there will be somebody, some college football commissioner that we all make jokes about, that will enforce these things, and there will be a board of trustees that will then come down and create these sanctions, and there'll be a whole mess of, is the college athletics profile even connected to the school anymore, and all of this jumbled mess. So that's the future of college athletics. But until then, things are just going to continue getting more expensive. Players are going to continue getting pricier. The transfer portal is not going to be stopped. Tampering won't be stopped. And I hate to paint the doom and gloom story, but that's the realistic facts of it.
Yeah, so I don't want to harp on this too long, because I know that especially in the off season, when it feels like these are the most important things to talk about, it seems like it just gets redundant, and then it kind of reminds you about all the things that you don't currently like about college football. So I know as a listener at times we can really get bogged down in that, and you can be like, ah, just shut up already. I just want to talk about next season. We know the deal is college football is a messed up world right now, and it's not completely entirely something that we like at the moment. So I don't want to harp on that too long. So we'll go ahead and transition to some other topics. And if you haven't caught on already, if you missed yesterday's show, yes, Brooks is not here. It's just me and Kirby. Will be me and Kirby for the rest of the week, which means tonight and then also Thursday night when we do our live show. Then he's continuing his football pilgrimage. So it's just me and Christian for tonight. So hopefully you stick with us, have some fun, share some laughs, and it gets and continue to build upon that ball of knowledge. So we had this on the show sheet yesterday, Christian, of Aaron Murray had a very interesting take and went ahead, stamped his flag on this one. I don't know if anybody else is going to be joining him on this one yet, but that's also kind of some of the brilliancy of it at mm-hmm. the same time as well. If you haven't seen it, Aaron Murray released this video, and he did the whole green screen thing where it's got his face talking, and then behind him is an article talking about how Kirk Cignetti had to get on one of his transfers, Nick Marsh, for wearing gold cleats at practice. And that leads Murray to go on this tangent about how the culture is already starting to crumble at Indiana, and this was the backbone of their team last year, where they do everything right. They do things differently. They're no flash. Like, everything's business here, and now it's already starting to crumble. And went as far as to say as they won't win another national title.
Now, to his credit, he also does the kind of the brilliant thing that you do in sports media where something is so far out that you give the take, but you also give the, it's going to be interesting to see if they can turn this around before the season comes. Because then if, say Indiana does win another title this year, you can point back to an Aaron Murray goes, well, they address these issues. Kurt Schenkel really is that good of a coach. But no, it was interesting to see how, you know, Aaron Murray pointed to this and it kind of said, this is the reason why Indiana won't win because the culture is eroding and all those things. And we've all kind of agreed that it's not going to be what it was last year. It's impossible to go 16-0 when you have lost that much talent, you've lost that much. But I think the gold cleats being the reason that's hammered home is kind of an interesting take. But I'm here for it because, you know, say Indiana goes 6-6 this year. Say they just have an abysmal year. Say Josh Hoover doesn't work out. Aaron Murray's going to have something to parade around because back in March he was talking about how, hey, the gold cleats was the first indicator. So I like the shot from Murray.
Every single time I hear a coach talking about what his player, one of his players was wearing, how that's not how we do things here, I can't help but always think of the Coastal Carolina David Bennett clip. Like that would
meows.
Yeah, we need more dogs. I got my extra bands on. Do I got my extra shoes on? We need dogs. And that's the clip I think of. And like, I obviously Kirk Cinetti isn't going to do that type of rant, but that's what I think of because, yes, like every team, like for me, like in high school basketball, one of my coaches was like, you don't wear sleeves, you don't wear anything, you just wear the jersey that we give you, and that's it. And like, so like some coaches, it matters a whole lot more than others. Ultimately, doesn't probably impact how you play on the field whatsoever, but no. I completely understand it from trying to establish a culture and making sure that, you know, everybody looks the same and everybody acts the same. But I don't think it's going to be the root reason as to why Indiana potentially never wins another national title.
No, yeah, I mean, and it's one of these things where it gets a little bit overplayed. Like, it's respected and loved when it results in wins. Like, everyone talks about the Saban way, everyone talks about the Belichick way, you know, as long as those guys won titles. Dabo Swinney was you know, championed and congratulated for his, hey, no transfers rule. We having our own evaluations within with our culture, and that worked out, and it was two titles, and everyone's like, Dabo Swinney's figured it out, guys. We know how that's gone now. Now that very thing that he's being championed for is a negative viewed as that. So I think this very well could be something similar for Indiana. I'm not predicting that Indiana falls off a cliff, but if Kurt Cinetti starts popping 8-4s and 7-5s, people are going to start going, well, it's because he cares too much about what the players are wearing. He needs to actually focus on the X's and O's. So
I wanted to ask this. Since Murray proposed this hypothetical world where Indiana doesn't win another, which could very well happen, you know, it's not weird for a team to win a national title, then you go 20 or 30 years without winning a national title or thing, especially for a program like Indiana, who doesn't have this long history of winning national titles, like a rich history of college football behind them anyways. Like if you were to tell me in 30 years, Indiana doesn't have another one, I don't think anybody's going to look at you super cross-eyed or anything like that. But I did want to ask, like, as an Indiana fan, would you be okay if that happened?
Yeah,
I would think so too. Like, it seems like an easy answer. Like, but once you get a taste of it, and like, and this is super interesting too, because we haven't had an instance like this where it just happened so fast. Mm-hmm. It happened so quickly where a fan base got to, and I know that you guys went through a long line of suffering, but let's also be real. There's a whole lot of Indiana fans last year that started tuning into college football and really started paying attention either the year before or last year. I know that not all of you guys were tapped in during the doom and gloom days. So for those types of fans, like say you're a 9-year-old kid, like this is your first introduction of Indiana football. And so it's like, we won a national title. We're so good. We got one of the best head coaches in college football. Are you okay if you don't win another one?
You're definitely bothered by it. But I think like there's a means as to what your team is. Like there are averages if you look at the long, zoom out and look at the long charts of Indiana is not traditionally a winning program. Now maybe Kurt Cinetti has turned that around and they're going to be great for the next 15-20 years. I would assume that Kurt Cinetti, after he leaves, whenever that might come, Indiana probably regresses to a team that it was once, and you know, 7-5s, 8-4s, commendable at that, but you start looking at that and go, okay, this is what Indiana football probably was at this time. So I don't think that you should be upset by that. I think the expectation's fair. Mm-hmm. Kurt Cinetti's proved that you should be that, but I'm not in the impression that Indiana fans would be as mad as Alabama fans or Georgia fans or Ohio State fans or Michigan fans or Texas fans if it was another 30 years without them winning a title?
Yeah, I think eventually we'll just get back to, like, I don't think that Indiana's going to all of a sudden fall off a cliff, especially under Kurt Cignetti. But I do think that, and, like, this is the other thing to like, talk about with Indiana, too, with the run that they have, like, how far does the success now continue to carry them? Like, even past Kurt Cignetti, like, did this completely change the program? So, like, when Kurt leaves, how is this job viewed amongst others? Like, is it considered now one of these top jobs? Because now you got Mark Cuban backing it up, and you got all these people that want to fund it, and you got more money pouring in now than ever. Like, how much does this national title actually change things for, like, the long-term Indiana Hoosier football program? Like, not now, and not, like, just during Kirk Cignetti's time as a head coach there, but, like, 20 years from now, like, is this the reason why they remain as one of the top teams in college football? I don't know. That's the other thing we don't know, because, as we just mentioned, like, spending changes so quickly, and a couple bad seasons, and maybe it uproots all your funding, and maybe people are like, oh, we'll go back to basketball. That was fun.
Yeah, I'm not going to proclaim that Indiana's about to fall off a cliff, or that they're going to be horrible after this, and that this was a one-time thing, but I could see that more than any other program. And that's not, I mean, that's realistically, that's what Indiana's been. Like, mm-hmm. if you told me that these 2 years with Kurt Cignetti were incredible, and then a decade later, they're kind of back to a middling Big Ten school, I wouldn't be astonished by that. So, mm-hmm.
yeah, I understand. All right. So, college referees in general, umpires, refs in basketball, refs in football, whatever sport you watch, whichever one's your favorite. Everybody does the same thing when it comes to those people, and they complain about them. You know, they make fun of them. Ah, they're the reason why we lost this game. Oh, that call was the reason why my team didn't win this game. And there's a huge problem right now, and I think most sports fans are aware of it, but especially in football, I know it's an issue in basketball as well, where the abundance of people that want to be referees and want to become referees, there's not a whole lot of them right now. So there's a bit of a shortage when it comes to them, so much so that the NFL has said that they're going to have to start poaching referees from the college level and have them call games on Sundays and Mondays and Thursdays because they simply do not have enough of them. So this goes from the D1 level, the D2 level, all of them. They're going to be looking for people that they can take from that level. And so then obviously that's going to sprinkle in and follow to college football, where I'm sure they'll have a shortage and whatnot. But it did bring up this question for me. So because of how much people have complained about umpires in baseball, we now have the ABS system. And if you don't watch baseball, if you don't follow it, what it is now is players can now challenge balls and strikes. You get two per game. I don't want to get bogged down the details, but now players have a say somewhat to where maybe, hopefully, the umpires don't completely dictate how a game goes. What is there something like this that we could apply, like the ABS system, and bring it to football? I have four options.
Let's hear yours, because off the top of my head, I can't think.
Okay, I know that we already have microchips in a football. I know the NFL is doing that, so you can see, like, was it actually a first down? How far did the ball actually get? But I do think that some form of ball marker, like I think of just across college football or across football in general at the collegiate and the professional level, some type of actual, like, an exact marker of where the ball is. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that would be super beneficial for football.
Yeah, I think the problem you run into with that is it's not just where the ball is, it's where the ball is when the player's knee touches.
Right. Well, so, like, referees, this is the other thing, is, like, people are like, well, why does baseball need umpires anymore if you're just going to just go ahead and use a computer system to call balls and strikes? Well, this is where you still have referees in football, because you still have to have someone spot the ball. But, you know, I don't know, you know. So that's an interesting one. So this is, I also propose this. We need some type of system that would actually tell us if the ball broke the plane.
I'm fine with that. Again, I think that the issue that you're going to run into with a lot of these is it's not just did the ball break the plane? Was it, you know, where was the ball when it happened?
Yeah.
It's did the ball carrier have possession? Was his knee down? Like, the example I would use for this is the Auburn Georgia game this year,
right,
where that fumble was being reviewed for ages. The ball crossed the plane.
Mm-hmm.
It just did not – it was not in possession when it did. So, like, how do you dictate that? Where's the way to figure that out?
And I think that's why it's hard to adopt anything like this into football, because it's not as black and white as balls and strikes. Like, it's either a ball or a strike. It either hit the strike zone or it didn't. Very simple terms there. But even for something like this, exactly what you're talking about. Of you would also have to have some sort of system that could determine, was the player's knee down? Did the ball come loose? Now you're getting really complicated here, and I don't think you need to be that complicated. Here's a nice simple one, something that is black and white. Field goals. It doesn't happen very often.
This one I like.
It doesn't happen very often, but could we just put up, like, we could have something that is like a screen of shows you the zone of where a field goal is actually good in between pylons or goalposts? Because, you know, if you get way above it, it's hard to tell, like, did it actually go over the goalpost? Did it go through? Like, did it – all these other things. Like, could we find some way to actually show, like, oh, was it actually good or not? I think this is the best option.
Not only that, give me a metric of that field goal was good from blank.
Yes.
I would love to know
how – everybody gives the estimates, you know.
Yeah, like, oh, that would have been good from 70. Like, would it actually have been good from 70? I would love to – that's something – now, that's not necessarily rule change, but I would
I'm sure Amazon Prime could figure that one out. They're the ones that have all the advanced analytics on stuff like this. But, yeah, I think this is the most, like, probable solution to where, like, hey, field goals. This would be nice and simple. And, you know, and again, it doesn't happen all that often, but just a potential. All right, this is my last one. And I think this one could work as well. I would put the field goal one, and then I'd put this one in, like, priority of, like, this is actually possible. We could do this. Players stepping out of bounds.
This is a good one. This one I like, where there's, like, sensors. Totally agree with that one. I think that makes a lot of sense. Again, how much is, like, the technology going to cost to do that? For a play, right. For something
that's
that happens
the other thing.
1 to 2 times a game at most. Like, at most, there's only a few arguments of,
you know,
did this player step out of bounds?
That's a really good point, too, because these aren't things that happen every single game. Like, we're going to – the field goal one I just mentioned, like, those situations don't happen all that often. How many times are you actually reviewing, did a player step out of bounds? Where did he step out of bounds? Balls and strikes are thrown every single game. There's tons of them. I mean, every single game, you are guaranteed to have instances where this is necessary. I don't know if football has something like that. I don't know if they have anything where it's needed, but I had some ideas. I think players stepping out of bounds, like, if it's not too expensive or so, I don't know. You know, I just wanted to throw out some ideas.
Yeah, I think that these are good ideas. I think that the issue you run into with football officiating in general is there's so many nuances to this, and there's so many subjective calls, like holding, targeting, pass interference, all of these things is like, it's more up to the judgment of the official as opposed to, did this ball cross the plane in a strike zone? Like, that's really one of the main rules. Or did the ball touch the batter's bat?
Right.
Like, stuff like that's simple. You can make that everything simple, but football, there's so many nuances. So,
you have any others you would want to give a suggestion for?
I think that you could utilize AI to some degree to determine whether or not this was pass interference, whether or not this was holding. But again, you're going to slow the game down to do that. You're going to take action.
And that's the other thing, too, is like, and whether or not you like it, at least I'm a big fan of what ABS is doing for baseball at this moment. Of, it's very nice and efficient. You tap the top of your head, they go to the board. It takes like 10 seconds. So you're really not adding that much time onto the game. But, and no, you know, maybe something that you're talking about there too is like, maybe we find a way to where we can shorten reviews, because there's times where replays take forever. I mean, it takes 10 minutes, it seems like, sometimes to review one singular play, and you got games that are lasting 4 hours or over 4 hours. So, but I don't know what that looks like. You know, I don't know how you would implement that to help speed up that process. I do think that there's obviously possibilities that you could use this and bring this to football, but I don't know what it is. I just gave my suggestions. Those are the ones that I could think of in that moment.
Yeah, no, I mean, these issues might become more pronounced if the NFL does poach college referees. So we'll see, but it's something to think about.
And, like, I don't think that people would want a robot determining penalties in football, because it's one of those things, because, like, in basketball, too, like, for me, like, I played basketball, so, like, there's hand checks every single time in basketball. It happened all game. Fouls happen all the time. More times than not, there's probably a foul on a play. In football, a penalty could be thrown every single play if you wanted to.
Correct.
Like, if you really wanted to go that by the book of what holding is or what pass interference is, all these different things, like, if you did shift to, like, someone, something making those decisions for you, it'd be an unwatchable product, in my opinion.
I agree. Wholeheartedly agree on that.
So, I don't know. You know, just some fun off-season content right there, I guess. All right, we have a new college football playoff committee member, Christian.
I'm glad this is getting brought up, because
You seem disgruntled by this.
I'm not disgruntled by it. I don't think. Go ahead and break the news for those who aren't aware.
Ladies and gentlemen, a former SEC head coach, well-known offensive coordinator, one of the best offensive minds maybe some would deem, has gone from coaching college football and is now going to be a member of the College Football Playoff Committee, and that person is Gus Malzahn.
Hell yeah, dude. So exciting. So glad that we're getting someone who actually knows the ins and outs of the game, a genius mind like Gus Malzahn, as one of these committee members who understands the X's and O's, what it takes to be a national championship team. He's coached some of the greatest players in this league. He coached Cam Newton. He's coached some incredible players at Auburn. He's a great addition to the College Football Playoff Committee. That's the overarching sentiment, right? And I understand that, like, Gus Malzahn's actually one of these respected people. He knows the sport. He's not Condoleezza Rice. He's not some out-of-touch AD who's just been thrown in there and thrown to the wolves in front of the screens. But here's my take on this. You could clone Nick Saban 1,000 times or name your most respected college football mind who knows every nuance of the sport, who you would trust to make the absolute best decision as to who's ranked where. Clone them all you want. Make them the committee. It's still human-based, it's still subjective, and it's still going to be flawed no matter what, because even if Lord Nick Saban, committee member, committee chairman, or Josh Pate, or whoever you want, picked Team X, you would have a complaint because Team Y is more deserving. The College Football Playoff Committee itself is a flawed system. It doesn't matter who you put in it. It's great that we're getting actual coaches and actual people who understand the game to put in it. That's great. But the issue comes in the fact that there's not a rigid system. No one complains about the NFL playoffs when the 10-6 Eagles don't make it in because there's a rigid system of you have to win your division. If you don't win your division, there's a wild card round and there's head-to-heads. There's things to figure it out. No one complains about conference championships when, these two teams went, but I think the third team was a better option because there is a rigid system that outlines what you have to do to get there. There is an outline for what you have to do from the start of the season to the end of the season. Whereas in the College Football Playoff Committee, it's kind of up to whatever the humans decide. So you can add whoever you want in the College Football Playoff Committee. It's not going to change the issues that are at hand with it.
Do you think Gus Malzahn watches football all that much? Like, casually? I know that as a coach, you have to watch film. And I know that Gus Malzahn definitely watched film. Not saying that. But does he strike you as a casual football watcher?
No, and I think that's part of the reason why I find it so funny that people put so much in the coaches. But, oh, it's the coaches.
Yeah.
They know more about the game than I do. Brother, Kirby Smart and Ryan Day are not sitting down on a Saturday to watch every college football game in the nuances.
But I can at least envision retired Kirby watching college football.
Yeah, so you're asking if, like, Gus Malzahn actually...
Like, now that he is not coaching, does he strike you as the type of person that's sitting down on his couch on a Saturday in the fall, and from noon until midnight, that guy is glued into his TV watching football? Because I know what I have envisioned in my mind of Gus Malzahn doing on a Saturday when he's retired. I don't know if it's accurate or not, but I envision him being in his work shed in his backyard, messing around with his World War II diorama, listening to a football game on the radio.
There are two options for this, and there is no in between. Gus Malzahn either wakes up at 9 a.m. on a Saturday and hops in. He's in his Snuggie. And he watches college football from noon till midnight.
Like Nick Saban. Like the video we saw of Nick Saban.
Like Nick Saban, yes. Or he's in a treehouse somewhere trying to build a time machine. And he's not watching 1 second of college football. There's no in between of this. There's no, oh, I'll watch this game, but I won't really pay attention to that one. Now, for the sake of the College Football Playoff Committee, I'd like to hope that he's watching all the games. But we'll see.
Yeah, Gus Malzahn definitely searches the dark web for, like, insane conspiracy theories.
Careful there.
Conspiracy theories.
Okay, that's all right.
To gain a lot of information and, like, just does an insane deep dive on the most absurd conspiracy theories.
That's fair.
Like, that's the kind of guy that he strikes me as. Like, I don't know. And maybe I'm completely wrong. Maybe I'm completely misjudging Gus. But I don't know. It's just like, we talk about it all the time. When the infamous shot happens, when it's conference championship weekend and we got all the committee members here in a room.
Everyone's taking off their badges and leaving them at the door. And we're not biased today. And there's a buffet of a crock pot and some Fritos for the
buffet is
to watch.
Spinach artichoke dip and some pita chips.
Everyone's wearing suits and it looks like a corporate event. Like, this is what you guys are doing to determine who's going to the college football playoff? Give me a break.
Yeah.
So,
but look, I'm glad like Gus Malzahn, I at least know, understands college football. He understands the levels to it. He understands all the different nuances in it. So I think it's a good thing that someone like him will be representative or will be representing the committee this year. But again, like he's one person. He's not the entire committee either.
No, yeah, this is the equivalent of if you have a car where the transmission is completely shot and someone goes in and goes, well, we just replaced the alternator for you. Like, that's great. That's better.
It was necessary.
That's going to help things, but the underlying issue still stands with this entire system as a whole, and that's not going to get fixed until we do something completely different to rebuild it. So,
yeah, I don't know. I mean, we have had some just weird figures, it seems like, on this playoff committee, and we'll see how it goes. I don't know. I mean, the good news is that eventually we feel like it's going to get to a point where a committee isn't even needed anymore as expansion continues and automatic bids come into the mix and all of those things. So we'll see where this goes. But, I mean, it's every year. Like, without a doubt, every single year there is some issue with every single committee of, like, how they rank teams or what it seems like they're prioritizing, or it seems like one week we prioritize this and then the next week that seemed like it didn't matter at all. Like, there's no consistency, and I think that's all what people want is they just want consistency. So I don't know. Maybe this year will be different, but I wouldn't bet on it.
No, it won't be different until you go to a NFL style system where they play. You know what you have to do from week one to get into the playoffs. You have to win Division X, or you have to have this record, or to be something like that. Like, until you get there. Which, by the way, I'm not saying that this is what I want. Like, I in an ideal world, this isn't what we have, but. In order to stop the committee got it wrong arguments, you have to get rid of the committee.
Do you think that they should just do the college football playoff rankings from week one on?
Or I think that would help, honestly.
I think that you could either do two decisions, which this first one would never happen. But I know some people who think that this is how it should be. No rankings at all until the college football playoff rankings comes out. You can't do that. We got to determine strength of schedule and all those other things somehow.
You think ESPN's about to let that revenue go to waste?
Right. So, like, that would never happen. But I do know some people that think that's how it should be, of, like, we have no rankings until the college football playoff rankings come out. And maybe you bump that up just a little bit to where you don't go three-fourths of the season without rankings. But, I mean, I do think it would help a little bit. Now, what you do get into there is then there's going to be a whole lot of preseason bias. They want to be right. That's who they had as the number one seed at the beginning of the year, so they don't want to look like idiots. So, yeah, they're going to slide them in as a 12th team even though they lost two games. All those good things. So maybe bump it up a little earlier in the season. Maybe don't go so late in the year. But I don't know.
It's a moot point, honestly.
Like, I agree.
The human element of it adds that flaw and will always open the door for – there's bias, they got it wrong, because it's a human element. So
yeah, I don't know. I think there's a lot of things that you could work around with the playoff and make it better. I don't know. Expanding, I don't think that's a solution, but that's the direction we're going. So maybe that does help. I don't know. I don't think it will. So there was a super viral video that went around in the football world today, and you came into the studio super passionate about it. I had my take. I think you had a different take on it. I think that the consensus, and if you haven't seen it, this is from Southeast Missouri's practice, and it's a ball carrier and then three defensive players diving in on him and just hitting the crap out of one another.
It's essentially a wedge drill, and instead of thudding up or tapping the hips like you normally do in a practice to avoid injuries, these boys are just killing each other.
Oh, they're diving at knees. They're doing it all.
Full contact, hit sticking, and at practice in spring. And this has obviously got a lot of pearl clutching, a lot of former players and current players going, oh my God, this is terrible. And then the other side going, this is what's wrong with America. Everyone's soft. This is why football sucks today. And my reaction to this was, I'm so glad that we are getting a first account and firsthand view at what basically every person my age and older went through 4 days a week in youth football practice. Like, you guys are finally getting an inside glimpse. And anyone who's younger than me, like, I feel like my generation is kind of the last generation where you were really hitting at practice.
The rules were much looser.
I vividly remember coming in from fifth grade practice and then going into sixth grade practice, and things were completely different. It's like, we're not doing hitting drills today? Like, what's this? Let me tell you what Monday through Thursday was for CYFA football. You wake up, you go to practice, and you do your warm up was 15 push-ups, some jumping jacks, you did some dynamic stretches, and then everyone got in a circle, and one player started around the circle and ran around it, and another started from the other end of the circle and ran the other direction, and you collided into each other. You did that for 20 to 30 minutes, and that was your warm-up to get the tone set and things like that, the physical. Then you got practice, and then the end of the day was Oklahoma drills, where two players lay on their back, flip over, and then sprint at each other. That was that for 4 days a week. And this is your 8 years old doing this. So now people are seeing college athletes doing this and going, oh, my God, put that coach in prison. It's kind of funny to see, like, bro, we were doing this every day for 5 and 6 years.
Yeah, so, like, now, look, I will say, like, probably not the smartest thing to be doing.
Oh, it's terrible for your body.
Yeah, but obviously.
Years are being taken off these young men's careers.
I mean, I would say that football in general, terrible for the body, all in all. I would say it's pretty bad for the body.
That's fair.
But super entertaining. But, you know, like, I don't know. Maybe something you maybe you can disagree with me on this, but like maybe something you do in fall camp because you know everybody talks about like, got to callus the body, got to get the body ready for the season. So like maybe you do that as like a little warm up, like hey, we're getting our bodies ready for the contact that we're about to be dealing with this season. I don't know about spring football in March.
This is the equivalent of when Happy Gilmore at the start of the movie is like, I got to toughen up for the hockey season.
Seriously,
and he just starts taking 90 mile an hour fastballs to the dome. He's like, this is getting me ready for the hockey season. It's like. You're probably just giving yourself brain damage. Like I don't think anyone from Southeastern Missouri, correct? That's the school.
Yes.
I don't think anyone in fall is gonna, you know, get home from practice on a fall Saturday or a fall whatever day and go, man, you know, I'm really glad we were hitting the hell out of each other in spring because I feel great right now. Mm-hmm. I feel calloused. And I get from that coach's perspective of like we're gonna set the tone. It's a new era here. We're gonna be tough. And that was probably like a very brief drill they're doing. I know this is being over exaggerated, but the risk that you run running a drill like that in the spring, in that style, by the way, a 3-on-1 with a ball carrier is kind of crazy. Like, there's not even lead blockers for that or anything. So, very funny. But at the end of the day, like, that's nothing surprising for me.
Yeah. I will say that I think that when you and I were growing up, and obviously before that, I don't know what it's like now because I haven't been around youth sports since I was a kid, obviously.
Right.
Wouldn't be a good idea. I will soon, though, I'd imagine, as I'm starting to have kids.
Just out there hanging out the field. Just like,
let's see what the new crop of talent's looking like.
I'm scouting for Coach Smart.
I work with Sports Illustrated, just trying to see what the up-and-coming talent's looking like. Need to know who's on my radar.
Who's that 6'6" man that just stands in the corner of the field?
With sunglasses on.
He's got a notepad.
He's got a ghillie suit on.
Writing down things. But yeah, no.
Then we did a much better job of like you truly found out at that age and early on like whether or not you liked a sport. I think that we did a lot of things that like truly made you know like I love this sport or like hey probably not for me. I don't know if I want to be doing this.
Oh yeah, dude. Like getting housed in an Oklahoma drill very quickly makes you go. Do I want to do this?
Yeah, that's how my football career was. My very short-lived football career was, yeah, not for me, dude. I'm good on that. I'll pass.
Bro, let me tell you. When you win the Oklahoma drill and you put someone on their ass, no better feeling in the world.
And I don't know. I was like, I'll go back to the baseball field. I'm good with that. You know, basketball season's in a couple of months. I'll just go shoot some hoops in the driveway until then. I think I'm good on this football stuff.
Yeah, but I mean, like, looking back, though, it probably is better that – it's certainly better that we don't conduct a practice like that, especially with the youthful minds of America.
Yeah, just, and I would say some of this is for the betterment of kids, like, okay? I'm not saying, like, back in my day, we didn't do this sissy crap. Like, no, I'm not doing that. I think that changes that are being made for youth sports are ultimately for the betterment of these kids and their the longevity of themselves. So I not doing that whole thing, but what?
10, 15 years down the road when, you know, hypothetically, if you have a son and you guys are, you know, coaching a youth football league and you guys are like, all right, we're doing Oklahoma drills today. We're going to run at each other and just crack each other's skulls for 20 minutes. You're like, Coach Jonathan, why are we doing this? He's like, we got to figure out how bad you want to play football, son.
I want to know if you want to do this. Coach, it's day one. I've never played football. Doesn't matter. We're going to find out if you like it right here, right now. Let's go.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to keep up with Southeastern Missouri and see how their season goes, if they're one of the toughest teams.
Will it be that interesting? Are you really going to be keeping up with Southeast Missouri?
I'll check in mid-November and be like, what's their record right
what's
now?
What's the injury report looking like for these boys? It is interesting. You know, we talked about Indiana earlier in the show, and they do things completely differently. Yeah. They practice less than anybody else. They study more film. They're very efficient with their practices, and they do that hoping that the health of their team will be better than everybody else. And it worked last year. So, you know, how does that compare to what Southeast Missouri will have in the middle of November compared to what Indiana will be looking like? I don't know. So we talked about Gus Malzahn, very well known in the Auburn space, in Auburn fandom. Did a lot of good things there. Regardless of how his tenure ended with the Tigers, I would say ultimately that was a success for them. But this video came across, and I believe it's Eric Winters talking about this, one of their safeties. This is after practice, and one of the question he gets asked is, hey, I noticed that you guys have an Iron Bowl practice period. Iron Bowl, obviously, is the rivalry matchup between Alabama and Auburn at the end of every college football regular season, one of the best rivalries in college football, and it means a whole heck of a lot to that state and every single fan that represents either Auburn or Alabama. And it means so much to Alex Golish that he wants to have an Iron Bowl practice session. Now, what they actually do in this, I have no idea. The only thing that the player said is things in this period just matter a whole lot more than others. It just feels different. The energy's different. Like, the focus is different. It's like, this is the most important thing that we have going on right now. What do you think about doing? Because, like, Michigan did something similar to this a few years ago, and it went viral when Jim Harbaugh mentioned that they have a beat Georgia period.
So this is what I'm remembering. There was a big sign. I don't remember if it was a sign or if it was like an actual something that they put up in the facility. But there was a big question mark, and it was ahead of the 21 season. And it was, what are you doing today to beat Ohio State? And everyone clowned Jim Harbaugh and said, this is the most little brother energy we've ever seen. This right. is hilarious. Loser, like all these things. And then Michigan went on to beat Ohio State 4 years in a row.
Sure did.
And it was kind of like, well, damn, I guess the what are you doing to beat Ohio State period worked. This is only going to age well if Alex Golish in his first season go out and they beat Kalen DeBoer in Alabama and Tuscaloosa.
Or at least finishes with a winning record against them.
Correct.
You know, like
correct.
One of those things.
So this is one of those strict things where the success in this and the coreness of this will be judged completely by how the results are. If we come back a year now and Kalen DeBoer and Alabama just destroyed Auburn and Tuscaloosa and it was a 30-point game, everyone's going to go, hey, y'all remember when Auburn had that Iron Bowl period in the spring and then yeah. they got beat by 30 points? That's foolish. It's all like I think of the Jeff Collins thing with Georgia Tech.
Yeah, I was going to say this.
They're out doing workouts and pregames and they're doing barbell curls and cleans and everyone's like,
corny bros out here doing.
Now, if Georgia Tech went on and they had a 9-win season that year or they were a really scrappy team, people would go, you know, Jeff Collins has figured something out here. Everything that you do and all of your philosophies and all of the practice things you implement is solely based on the results of your season. Perfect example of this, Kurt Cignetti at Indiana. We just talked about it. The not practicing, the having older players on your roster. Everyone's looking around going, man, that Kurt Cignetti, he figured something out. If Indiana went 7-5 this year or 6-6, we'd be clowning Kurt Cignetti for saying, can you remember when he said, I haven't even beat everyone yet at the basketball game when he was first introduced and how he thinks getting all these old has-beens is going to make you a good football team?
Mm-hmm.
It's all results-based. So, yeah, it's funny right now to look at this and go, it's a little weird to have an Iron Bowl period. It's very little brother energy, but at the same point, hell, you beat Alabama this year, you look like a genius.
I mean, as an Auburn fan, at least at the very least, you know that your head coach is very aware of how much this rivalry means, and at least you're doing something to show that you do care about it and that it means something to you. This does seem to be a bit of a new phenomenon in college football, I would say, because when Brent Key got hired at Georgia Tech, one of the biggest things that he talked about is, I hope we beat them every year. I hate Georgia so much. To hell with Georgia. Blah, 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 blah. Obviously, that hasn't aged so well as he does not have a single win against the Bulldogs since he's taken over as head coach at Georgia Tech. You mentioned the one with Jim Harbaugh. But I also remember Jim Harbaugh having a beat Georgia period, and this is at the point in time where Michigan lost to Georgia in the Orange Bowl. They came close to potentially playing for a national title, and then the next year they go and lose to TCU in the semifinal game.
And that was the joke of beat Georgia. They should have had a beat TCU period.
Yeah,
instead.
And it's like, y'all don't even play Georgia every single year, so why are you having a beat Georgia? Well, at the time, Georgia had just rattled off back-to-back national titles, so the whole thing was, we're going to make sure that we're better than the best right now so that we are the best at the end of the season. And sure, in the heat of the moment, it's like, oh, there goes Jim Harbaugh again doing one of his goofy things, something that doesn't make any sense, and it aged well. And now nobody talks about it anymore because it's not funny, because it actually worked. So you're exactly right. These things are always results-based. Like, it's either going to age really well and nobody's going to talk about it anymore, or it's going to age poorly if Alex Golish is ultimately fired from Auburn, it's going to be, ha, 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 never beat Alabama, yet you dedicated 15 minutes to practice every day about the Iron Bowl, like things like that, you know?
Yeah, I mean, again, so we wish them well.
Yeah, hope it works out for you, Auburn, I suppose.
Did you see the internet is clowning Deion Sanders today?
I did see this.
So
I don't know any context, by the way.
So I found the context, and apparently it's Deion.
Should we deliver the no context version first?
Yes, that's what I was going to do.
Okay.
So, Deion Sanders, the Colorado Buffaloes had their pro day today. And obviously, for those who know, pro day is when your prospective NFL scouts come to your facility and they watch your players and for a private workout, and they do all the things that you basically do at the NFL Combine. But you get a more in-depth look at it because it's just your players. There's a clip going viral of Deion Sanders sitting on an exercise ball and holding a fishing rod. And people are kind of like, this is what's wrong with Deion Sanders. He's checked out. This is goofy. He's making this about him once again. And in fairness, Deion Sanders has done this to himself a lot because he is very much a showman and a theatric. He actually went on his social media to clarify what this was about. He said that basically one of his players had been begging him for a Coach Prime rod and reel, which I guess he's got a rod and reel line as well.
What the heck?
Along with all the
others. What doesn't this guy have?
I don't know. He's a savvy businessman.
Deion Sanders is like the Shaquille O'Neal of appearance and things like that.
He is the Shaq. He is called
like Shaquille O'Neal. Shaquille O'Neal is in every commercial. Me and my father-in-law were watching something the other day, and we were just listing off the number of commercials that he's in, and it's like, oh, he's got Papa John's, he's got Home Depot, he's got the General, he's got Icy Hot. Like, what isn't this guy in? Deion Sanders is that with anything, I feel like. Oh, he's got a line for this. He's got a hoodie line. He's got a hat line. He's got a fishing rod line, huh?
Yeah, so apparently one of these players was like, Coach, I need a fishing rod. And what he told the player was, hey, if you run this time at the 40, I'll give it to you. So he had it. He said, I had it on standby, so I was going to give it to him on spot if you were in it. Which is honestly, you know, a very commendable thing for Coach Prime and all those. It is very funny to think about of, you know, you're an NFL scout coming here. There's probably not a ton of you because Colorado didn't have a great season and there's not a ton of prospects. So there's probably like 15 to 16 NFL scouts there all looking around. They're like, is that fishing rod that Deion has? Like, what the hell is going on? And then whoever it is runs the 40 and they like check their stopwatches to look at the time and they're like, yes. And then Deion walks over with his fishing rod and hands it to him. He's just going, what the hell is this program?
Yeah, so interesting. I don't know that I ultimately have a take on this because I don't know. I've never, anything that I feel like I watch of Colorado, it's something that I've never seen before. And maybe this is something that, hey, maybe we wait to give the young man the fishing rod until after the pro day. But it, like, and you just avoid the ability for someone to take a 5-second video of you sitting on a yoga ball with your fishing rod. Like,
does he have a fishing rod over there? Oh, he does.
Deion Sanders sitting on his yoga ball, watching his players run around the field like this. It's like, what are you doing? At first I was like, he's just ready to go hit the ponds. Like he's ready to go hit the lake.
That was the thing. It wasn't rigged up at all. It's just the rod and reel. There's no line on it. It's just it's straight out the supermarket. So, again, Deion Sanders, if there's one thing we know about him, he is the ultimate showman. He is someone who wants to be seen and be talked about, and even when the energy's negative and the attention's negative, he does not care because he likes that. So, I'm not going to fault Deion Sanders for that because that's who he is, but definitely a choice, I would say.
All right. You got anything else?
No, dude. You know what? We always get flack for, oh, they shorten us in the local hour.
Local 45.
Local 45. How about the local 70?
Local 70. You heard it here first. We'll see you guys on the other side. We got a whole lot to talk about. In fact, I was so right. I was so right, so much so, I'm taking a little bit of a victory lap. We'll see you guys.